I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, with Artemis II making its historic trip around the moon, NASA is preparing to land people back on the lunar surface for the first time in over 50 years. And there were plans for a permanent moon base and then going off to Mars. What do these missions actually look like, and when could these events happen? And later on The Source, solar power is getting ready for a major upgrade. New materials are making solar more efficient and cheaper. Reducing the cost and space requirement for solar energy could be a game changer in the rush for more power in fighting climate change. We're going to have the latest. This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Artemis II and its four-member crew is now heading back to Earth. The next challenge for this space mission is getting back home safely to terra firma. And now there is growing excitement about the next stages of the mission to return people to the surface of the moon, building a permanent lunar base, and then heading off to Mars. We're joined by Bruce Betts, Chief Scientist and Light Sail Program Manager for the Planetary Society, the world's largest space interest group. And Dr. Betts, welcome to The Source.
Thank you very much.
Our phone lines are open. If you've got a question or a comment about how things are going with this mission and moving forward, what do you think about building a base on the moon, getting people back on the moon, going off to Mars? Give us a question. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So, Bruce, what do you think about how Artemis II is going?
Oh, it's very exciting. They have some small glitches, most notably the toilet's gotten a lot of publicity, but overall the mission's going great, and quite nominally, as the space biz would say, it's so far so good.
Yeah, for a high-tech space mission, it's still a very human kind of a problem.
And I'm sorry, what?
So for a high-tech space mission, it's very
human kind of problem. I missed a key word. So yes, it is kind of a problem, but at least they have one, which they didn't have on Apollo. So they're not using bags, and they seem to have gotten it fixed.
So it shows you they're still working the bugs out. This is an experimental flight after all. That's what this is for, a shakedown cruise, so
exactly.
To speak. So let's look forward to, okay, so Artemis, we've had Artemis 1, this is Artemis 2, Artemis 3. What is that going to be like? What are the plans for Artemis 3?
They've just recently changed that. Artemis 3 was going to be sending humans to the surface of the moon, but now they've added in the equivalent of, for those who are familiar with the Apollo missions, it's basically an Apollo 9 equivalent, where they will stay in Earth orbit and test out things like docking to the landing vehicles that are provided by commercial companies, and test out systems in Earth orbit rather than having to do it at the moon, and therefore reduce the risk and danger.
So they'll be testing out getting into the lunar lander and
right.
The spacesuits and all these other things. So we don't even know which lunar lander we're going to be using at this point.
Yes, that is correct. That is very different than the past. So they have SpaceX is developing one, and Blue Origin is developing one, and they will decide to test one or both on the next mission, and then decide what to use to go to the surface at a later time. So it is different,
right? So do you have a preference? The SpaceX one is more tubular looking, and the Blue Origin one is kind of this more squatty and kind of looks like the Apollo lander.
No, I don't. I mean, no, I'd make the broad statement that what's important is it's whatever has the lowest risk and what's tested out the best, and that remains to be seen.
All right, let's go to Randall. And Randall, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, you're reading my mind. What are we going to land on the moon? A starship or something else? I was excited about SpaceX 4 or 5 years ago, but then you know who went off the deep end, bought a social media platform, got into everything else but SpaceX. And now I've taken to calling it the Space Goose because, like the Hughes F4 Hercules, here we go again. Another ultra wealthy guy with overblown plans for a flying machine that's never going to live up to its planned potential. I mean, has that thing even made it up and down safely once? I don't think it has.
So you're talking about
What's next?
the Starship and his
Yes.
okay.
Yes, the Starship. It has yet to go up and down safely one time. I don't think it has.
Well,
Has it?
we're preparing for another launch over at this, South Texas. So Bruce Betts, what about Starship and some of its flaws?
Starship is an enormous rocket, and they've had, as the caller mentioned, a number of issues with multiple launches, and so it's the nature of the space business that early launches are very worrisome because there's so many things that can go wrong, and so you test it out and hope, but they'll be using SLS for the rocket they just used, which has only flown twice, will be carrying the astronauts, and the lander will be launched on a separate thing like a SpaceX rocket or a Blue Origin rocket, and then rendezvous at the moon with the Orion capsule. So yeah, it's that rocket is a big challenge because it's huge and it's had problems. And so I mean, SpaceX has had a lot of success with their other rockets, which is unusual in the space business not to have more failures. So now they're going through the phase of having lots of failures, which they learn from. So we'll see. That's a long answer to say, I don't know. We'll see.
So the question for people who don't know a lot about rocket science, like myself, they look at the illustrations of SpaceX, their lander, and it is a long tubular, landing, it's a rocket,
Right.
and you'd have to go down like an elevator to get to the lunar surface, whereas the Blue Origin lunar lander, you have a ladder. And so the question is like, well, it seemed like a ladder makes a lot more sense than some space elevator.
I personally would agree with you. None of the engineering teams have asked my opinion, which makes sense since I'm a scientist by training. But ladder is, you always like things in space, I agree with you, that are reliable, even if they're not the highest tech. And a ladder is a ladder, and it's reliable, and elevators, as we know, break down. So it's an odd choice. It also The tubular rocket design looks more sci-fi, but it seems like it would be more unstable. On the other hand, I assume they would fail over and over again with their return of their solid rocket boosters off their other rockets, and they have a very good success rate at landing those in with which are basically something similar, cylindrical rockets they use retro rockets on the way down. And so it does intuitively seem like the squat lander Apollo-like with the ladder would be a better bet in terms of risk, but I am not familiar with the details, and I'm sure other people are and will be looking at that closely.
Yeah, because they've yet to make a decision on that. That's something to look forward to as we move towards putting people back on the moon. If you've got a question or a comment, give us a call. Sean, I'm going to get you on the air when we come back. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. When we come back, I want to talk about proposed budget cuts to NASA and a refinement of the mission. What does that look like? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. In the next half hour, we're going to be talking about big developments in the world of solar power. But right now, we're talking about what's happening with NASA and going back to the moon and beyond to Mars. You know, what would that look like? You can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And Sean, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I think one of the interesting things about all the space missions and NASA stuff is all the random technology that they've created to solve their own problems that are now being used in our own everyday lives. So one of my favorite examples is the electric drill that they had to solve the problem of being able to go out into space, do the spacewalks, and be able to do maintenance. And how do you, have these portable things? So the electric drill with the battery pack stuff is what they figured out. And now we have that kind of technology, and it's kind of spread everywhere with all kinds of stuff. So what I'm wondering is if these new missions and new stuff that's going on, have you seen anything, or is there anything you've noticed that's like, oh, this is some really interesting stuff that they're doing that'll probably have some immediate or soon application in our everyday lives?
All right, Sean, thank you for that. And Dr. Bruce Betts, Chief Scientist and Light Sail Program Manager for the Planetary Society, your response?
I have not, but I'm just generally admit to be being poor at predicting the future and what will be useful and what wasn't. I am sure that based upon all the past times that they've developed new technology, you will derive a lot of things out of this that are helpful, from everything from medicine to everyday life. So it's one of the things that comes out of an investment in NASA is the things that you don't know are going to be worked out that help us here on Earth.
So we have a new NASA administrator, Jared Isaacman. He is calling for a more aggressive timetable in igniting these missions, getting off the ground. He definitely wants to make sure that the United States does not lose what some say is a space race that we have with China. China has had a lunar timetable that seemed to be competitive with the United States. So do you think that, what about the race with China? Do you think the United States is in a race with China to get to the moon?
I think it's how we, it's whether we or they decide we're in a race. So we won the race, which was in the 60s with the Soviet Union, and for national prestige and landed humans. So now there seems to be a trying to recreate that. And at some level, yes, because the Chinese have been, after being, for lack of a better term, way behind or not focused on space exploration for a long time while we were doing it. In the last 10, 20 years, they've really, really, really ramped up. So they do a lot of, they've got humans in space right now on their space station, just as we do, and our allies and others on the International Space Station. They have had several missions to the moon that have been surprisingly successful. I say surprising not because it's China, but because when countries have first flown missions to deep space, whether it be the moon or elsewhere, typically there are a number of failures before they get it right. And the Chinese have nailed it pretty well on things, including doing robotic sample return from the far side, which is the first time that was done. So they are very much on have a time scale, and they're filling in missions, and they're looking to put humans on the moon in the next few years. So certainly perception-wise, it is a race. Whether it just doesn't have quite the same look, as in my opinion, as the race for the Soviet Union, because of the different political dynamic and the fact that we've done it, we've gone there before. We're going there with better technology. We're going back and doing better, different science, going to places that are more interesting, but it's similar. So I don't know. It's certainly a way that is being couched by some, and in part to try to help garner support, including political support, for our moving forward in these areas.
So what about cuts, proposed cuts that was released recently that to NASA? They would not be cutting back on these Artemis-type missions and the moon base, but some of these more pure science missions that NASA is known for would be being cut back. What are your concerns?
We're at the planetary side here. We're very concerned. And this happened, we went through this last year, and part of what we do is educating the public and doing science projects, but part of what we do is trying to do advocacy for things just like this. And basically, the administration has, at the same time they've got Artemis going and successful orbiters at Mars and science going on all over the place, they've proposed to slash the budget for the second year in a row. Congress undid a lot of that last year, but only after a large amount of NASA employees had been fired, contractors had been fired, missions had been canceled. But a lot of them got saved, and partly through the effort of groups like ours and people pushing back. But now they've come back and said the same thing. So it's they've got a 50% cut in science as is proposed, or 47, basically 50%, and a roughly one quarter of the budget to be slashed from the overall top line budget. Simultaneously, they've got what you talked about, which is Isaacman's vision, and trying to move faster and do more, putting humans out there. And so, for example, there's an incompatibility that seems fundamentally there. And what NASA does that no one else has been able to do as well is the science. And one has to ask, if we're doing these things and we're not funding the science, it makes it considerably less compelling. So it's something that we will push back again on, and hopefully get our members and people out there to help and try to undo once again what was put in there last year. So how they resolve the plans they have for human and exploration and the budget is kind of tough, at least for me, to figure out. For example, they put money into $20 billion, which sounds like a lot, but over 7 years for doing the lunar base they propose. It seems a gross underestimate, personal opinion, but besides that, they don't have money in the budget, as far as I'm aware, to support the science and the analyses for safe implementation, the ground people that are going to be needed. So it's a concern. It's a long way of saying that.
Is there a particular science mission that you think should not be shortchanged or cut that NASA is talking about cutting right now?
So there are ones that got kind of saved last year through our efforts and others' efforts, and that one of the ones that I'm very excited about, which I think is not on the chopping block this year, but I'd have to look in more detail, is an asteroid telescope, for space telescope, to specifically find asteroids and near Earth asteroids and whether they are in orbits that might have them collide with Earth. And that I think is doing pretty well, but there are a couple of Venus missions that we haven't been back to Venus in detail in a while. And there were some there were missions that were already slated to go, and they were threatened. Even some of the ongoing missions, even the Voyager that's been working for pushing 50 years, there are threats to budget on that. So all sorts of science missions are under threat.
What are your, you don't like to predict the future, but what can you tell me about moving to Mars?
I can tell you one side of that, which is part of why I think it's tough to predict the future. It's really hard The moon is really hard. The moon is 1,000 times farther than low Earth orbit, where the space station is. Mars is another couple orders of magnitude, factors of, hundreds farther away, and you have communications delays. You've got the hardest place in the solar system probably to land on, because which is not obvious, but Mars has a thin atmosphere. It's kind of like the atmosphere 100,000 feet up on Earth. And so on the moon, you can just fire, just like it's easy. It's not easy, but you can fire up your retro rockets and use that to slow you down. On a place like Venus or Earth, you can use heat shields and you can use parachutes to slow you down. On Mars, you're like caught right in the middle, where you have to use everything you possibly can to slow yourself down. And when you start sending humans, you have to send a whole lot of stuff to keep them alive. And so you have much heavier items than we'd ever be landing. So that even landing every part of the mission is a challenge. It's a month, at least many, many months, if not a 3-year mission. You're in deep space where you have more particle radiation and danger from it. You're farther from Earth and have to be more autonomous. There's light. So anyway, bottom line, it's going to be tough. And so I am, again, personally, not optimistic that it's going to happen quickly, because, again, it's another huge leap. We had our leap to do the moon, and it is hard, and it's harder than Earth orbit. But going to Mars is really hard. Now, I say that as someone who spent most of my career studying Mars. I love Mars. It's fascinating, and there's a lot going on there, but it's going to be tough to send humans. We will do it someday, and people will keep working on it, but it's tough.
You think humans are necessary? I mean, robots are getting better all the time.
That is a philosophical and practical debate that occurs all the time. I think the best is if you're exploring with both, personally. But so the robots are getting better and better, and their capability is better and better, and they're much, much cheaper, and you don't risk people's lives when you fly them. But when you fly humans, you have an emotional connection that you can't get with robots of people on Earth, just watching them and their enthusiasm for this mission, I think, shows that. And you spend a lot more money getting them there, keeping them alive, getting them back. But once they're there, humans are much more efficient. So you have to be super, super careful with, like, the rovers on Mars will go, they go 100 meters or 100 yards in a day, and it's a huge deal. So humans are much faster and more efficient once you're there. So different people have different thinkings. My thought is the most efficient is if you do both. But I think humans, you send not for the science, but you have other reasons if you're going to send humans, in terms of inspiring the next generation and connecting to them.
Do you think people are being inspired right now with Artemis 2 flying? We're seeing new photos of the Earth from the moon, and there's a lot of yeah. coverage. This is it's a turning point.
I hope so. No, I think it's similar. Although not at the same level, probably, but there are whole generations that haven't seen humans at or near the moon, much less on the moon. And the Apollo generation, as it's sometimes called, which I'm part of as a child, I witnessed the Apollo 17 launch, and that was the last launch of humans. And it inspired a lot of people. And it's also something whether it was the 60s or now, there's a lot of bad stuff in the world. And to see something where everyone has worked together and accomplished something great, I think is inspirational, and people are enjoying it, and they are they pay attention when astronauts take pictures, as even more than robots, which are doing it all the time. And so I hope so. I don't know that it's a turning point, but hopefully it is, and hopefully it's the beginning of an inspiration like Apollo, but with the new generation, the Artemis generation, as NASA likes to phrase it.
Bruce Betts, he's the chief scientist and light sail program manager for the Planetary Society, the world's largest space interest group. And Bruce, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you. Have a great day.
That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.